accession number 20671, reel 3.
Bramley, end of reel 2. Leo Rumley, reel 3. So you were settled at Ashford and with the 53rd, and so your training continued then, did it?
Yes, principally because they said to me that they didn't need any more dispatch riders, but they'd been told they were going to receive new anti-tank weapons, and would I consider training onto anti-tank. So I said yes. I think at the time they had 2-pounder anti-tanks, but they were getting 6-pounders. So I was sent to Lydd, and I don't know if you know Lydd, but it has a vast beach of boulders. So it's ideal because civilians, it's not a holiday resort at all. And it was used by the army as a firing range, firing out to sea. So I went down there and I was taught the 6-pounder, firing, as I say, to targets that were towed up by sea. And I think we used to go down to Lydd on the Monday and come back on the Friday. And we should stay in Nissen Huts, just outside Lydd.
And who was training you with these?
This was the artillery. The Royal Artillery was training us. And I became quite good with the 6-pounder. And when I got back to Ashford, of course, we took delivery of our 6-pounders. And initially they were towed by a carrier, which was not a Bren carrier. They did have a name, I just can't remember it at the time, but it might come to me eventually. So we did practice, continued practicing then on mounting, dismounting, setting up for the firing position, loading and firing blanks and what have you. And the life in the 53rd when we were in Ashford was very regimental. They were sticklers for proper procedures in everything. And every Saturday you had to go on the commanding officer's parade. And this consisted of a series of tests which you had to carry out, mainly to do with running or something similar. He was a great one for cross-country running, Colonel Leo Williams. He was a great one for cross-country running and this sort of thing. And the thing was that only after you'd completed the set number of tests were you then given a yellow and green lanyard to wear on your uniform. And of course that then made, there were two types of soldiers in the 53rd reconnaissance, those with and those without the lanyard. And when the whole regiment had successfully gone through this series of tests on a Saturday morning, they started all over again. And I think the second time, when you'd won your lanyard, you were given extra days off. Not to go anywhere, but to be excused all duties. So you can have a day of rest, lying in your bed all day if you wanted to. Two or three notable incidents while I was at Ashford. The regimental sergeant major was a little Irishman, Paddy. And he was an absolute stickler for bull. He was only about 5'2", and he used to strut around like a little peacock. And I first clashed with him. We were sent to the the company office, and this company office had an entrance to it and a hallway with the staircase going up either side of the hall, and underneath the staircase was the double doors leading into various rooms, and we were told to wait under the stairs to go into one of these rooms. And the next thing that we knew was that Paddy had walked in and said, I want your names. You're on a charge in the morning. So we said, what for? And we were told, don't answer me back, 9 o'clock, company office, tomorrow morning. And we were accused, well, I was accused, of failing to salute an officer. Apparently, whilst we'd been under the stairs, an officer had walked through the hall and up the stairs. And we had our backs to him, so, of course, we didn't know. But we'd failed to salute an officer. So, I don't know if you know the procedure, but in the army, you go on your officer's orders, and if you don't accept his punishment, you can go before the commanding officer. So, Paddy gave his version and said that the officer had walked through and we hadn't saluted him. So I thought, it's very unfair, this. So I refused to accept the squadron leader's punishment. They went before the commanding officer. And I just said to the commanding officer, I said, I knew that reconnaissance was a special branch of the army. I said, but I didn't realise that we had to have an extra pair of eyes to see behind us as well. And I realised it had been a bit sarcastic, but anyway, the commanding officer said, are you sure that you didn't? I said, we were stood under the stairs with our backs to the main entrance, waiting to go into the rooms in front of us. If we'd have been stood with our backs to the rooms, we wouldn't have known when we were being called for. That's what we're told to do. Case dismissed. Paddy was furious. And the second incident was that they used to mount a 24-hour guard on the main gate. And the 24-hour guard starts at 6 o'clock at night, after you've had your tea. And the idea is that there is more than one person over and above the number required for the guard. Say they require 12 for the guard, then 13 people have to parade. And the adjutant with the sergeant major inspects the guard and he picks what he considers to be the best turned out to be the adjutant's stick for the next 24 hours. And the stick is usually, you carry a stick to indicate that you are that. But for 24 hours thereafter, your job is to run errands for the adjutant. If he wants to find somebody, he sends you. And it's a nice 24-hour job because you exclude all other duties. And you eat in the officer's mess, in the kitchens, because you have to be near the adjutant, you see. So we paraded, and the adjutant turns up, but no Paddy. And they hang around, and eventually the adjutant says, well, I can't wait any longer. I'll inspect the guard. I'll pick my stick, and that'll be it. So he did. He inspected the guard, picked the stick. We were dismissed to the guard room, and the guard sergeant had put the first two on the gate. And Paddy turns up. He insisted on bringing us all back again for an inspection. And he said to me, you've got filthy equipment. And what had happened was that he'd put us on parade under the tree next to the guard room, and it had been raining, and some of the rain off the tree had dropped onto my equipment and had stained it. So again, I put on a charge, and again I refused to accept the OC's punishment. I went before Leo Williams again. So he said, "Have you anything to say?" I said, I'd like the adjutant, Major Cragen. So they sent a runner for him, you see, to fetch him, and they brought him in. So I said, "Did you inspect the guard last night?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Did you select your stick man?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Did you dismiss the guard to the guard room?" He said, "Yes." So I said to the commanding officer, "The sergeant major is telling us that he knows better than the adjutant, that the adjutant doesn't know how to do his job, because if I had filthy equipment, why didn't he see it? He dismissed the guard to the guard room. It means he's satisfied with it." Dismissed again. And of course, when I got outside, Paddy said to me, words to the effect, "I'll get you for this," you know. But he never did.
His name was Paddy.
I'll let you know in a minute.
Yeah, yeah. And his, what was his rank?
He's the RSM.
Right. So Ashford was very, very different from the training. Do you think the 53rd was sort of very aware that they had an awfully big job to do and a bit of a challenge? Right, so that Paddy was RS
Pentland.
WH.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So, I mean, the 53rd seemed to be aware they'd got a huge job to do, didn't they?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that the 53rd knew they were earmarked for the invasion. Because our training then consisted of embarking and disembarking from imitation landing craft. And going through all the various manoeuvres that the reconnaissance regiment was expected to be to do, night patrols, aggressive patrols through enemy territory, collecting and bringing back prisoners of war as a top priority. Hours and hours spent on vehicle and aircraft recognition, so that you don't fire on the wrong people. More marching. And I don't think there was a time, hardly, when we weren't on manoeuvres of some kind while we were at Ashford.
Where did they take place, mostly?
Oh, in the south of England, obviously. But some of them, we travelled quite some distance, on the Salisbury plains.
Did you do these manoeuvres with other...
Oh, yes, with other regiments and other divisions, with the Americans and the Canadians, yes.
How did you get on with the Americans on manoeuvres?
Oh, quite well. As it turned out, we came under their command two or three times when we were in France and Belgium. And... there were quite a lot of Americans stationed around Ashford at the time.
So what did the British troopers think of the Americans?
Well, I think one of our problems was that we were told, of course, that we had to salute the American officers. But it was very difficult to distinguish who was and who wasn't an officer, because they only wear their insignia on their cap, whereas British officers wear their insignia on the lapels. And... a lieutenant, for instance, has one tiny silver bar on his cap. And of course, if he hasn't got his cap on, the uniforms are almost identical, because they all wore collar and tie and you know, lovely jacket uniforms and so on when they were out for the evening. Whereas, of course, our lads all wore battle dress, and you could tell an officer because he had a collar and tie on. It was quite easy, it was difficult. And of course, Paddy used to relish on these reports that we'd failed to salute an officer an American officer and so on.
Did you bump into the Americans then in Ashford? You know,
Yes, in the pubs occasionally on a Saturday night.
Did you mix with them all?
Well, we mixed it with them, yes, sometimes.
Did you?
And the Canadians would come to our assistance occasionally.
Right. So how would you fall out with the Americans?
Mainly over women. Yeah. Mainly over the favours of the local ladies. Mm. Of course, we outnumber them about 100 to 1.
So, I mean, a lot of young men together, I mean, were ladies a sort of bit of a preoccupation?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. Because most of them were, there were a few married men, most of them, but the majority were young single blokes, and they were away from home. Mm.
And, were the ladies of Ashford welcoming?
On the whole, yes. Mm. Yes. Oh, they were everywhere, practically. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think you had a bit of a, you know, a bit of a, an advantage being in the uniform?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. The only disadvantage was that, of course, the Americans had a lot more to spend than we did, and you could treat the girls to more than we could. So
So you got on better with the Canadians?
Yes, because, well, first of all, they wore the same uniform as us, except they had a Canada flash on the battle red. And I don't think they were quite as well paid as the Americans. But and, of course, they had an affinity with England anyway. Most of the Canadians, or Scotland anyway, with Britain. A lot of the Canadian regiments had Scottish names. You know, there's a Canadian Black Watch. And so.
Can you remember any particular manoeuvre that you did with the Americans or the Canadians, you know, where it was and what you did?
No, I remember on one occasion the Americans were the enemy. And of course, what we found so unreal was that we had these umpires, and we knew that they were umpires, and we knew that in a battle situation there wouldn't be any umpires, sort of thing. But I suppose they had to be umpires there to see
what
did
the umpires actually do. What was their role?
Well, to make sure that you carried out the manoeuvre that you were supposed to carry out, and usually it was a matter of defend and attack. You know, they would have a position, they would defend it, and it was your job to attack it, and so on. And I think it was just a matter of trying out various tactics that had been worked out by staff to see whether they worked or not, and what the problems on the ground would be in carrying these things out. But, most of them involved us in some kind of inconvenience, either not having the food when we should have had it, or the weather was against us and the territory was against us, or that sort of thing.
So you enjoyed attacking the Americans, did you?
Yes, we learnt some very good tactics off them in street fighting. We developed a system whereby if you were going into a house, you would take two soldiers, one each side of the front door, and you would open the front door, throw a grenade in, close the door and wait for it to go off. Now, the Americans had a completely different approach to this. They had a bazooka, and we didn't. We only had this Piat, which was very unwieldy and difficult to load. They had a bazooka, which was infantry carried and was light. And all they used to do was they'd go to the gable end of a house, and they'd kneel in the garden, 20 or 30 yards from the gable end, and blow a hole in it with a bazooka. And they would rush in through the hole and then turn the bazooka at right angles and blow a hole through the ceiling. And we thought, well, this is marvellous. I mean, it doesn't put you at any risk at all, you know. They're on the receiving end of the bazooka. If they're in the room when it comes through the wall, you know, they're going to feel the full effect of it. And the same if they're upstairs. One come through the floor. And we said to our officers, you know, what we want is bazookas. You know, can we get some of these bazookas? Because they seem to be the answer to most things. And they did the same thing with their tanks. Their tanks were obviously, and they knew it, they were inferior to the Germans. So they never took them on head to head, but they used them for different purposes. For instance, if you were, again, in an urban situation and you were going down one road and you knew that the enemy was on a parallel road to what you were and they were lobbing mortars over to you, you couldn't see them, but you knew very well they were there. What the Germans, the Americans would do, well, they'd just turn the tank turret onto the houses and blast a hole through the whole row of houses until they could see the enemy.
So what did the British officers think of the American tactics?
Well, I mean, when they saw them, I think they were as impressed as we were that they worked. And the thing was that they didn't put themselves at risk. Whereas a lot of our tactics was very risky for us to carry out. And the Americans, I think, and this was the thing that we found so different, that the Americans didn't put themselves at risk any more than they had to. They used the guns a lot more effectively than we did.
So you didn't get your bazookas, though?
We never did. Not until we were actually in Holland. We acquired one or two.
So, the training goes on at Ashford. How long were you there altogether?
Oh, we were there until the following June.
Right, June 44.
Yeah, June 44.
So, what did you know about the invasion? What did you know ahead?
Very little. We knew it was coming off because you could see the build-up all the way around you. I mean, the whole of that part of England was just one big military camp of Allied forces. And if you went from Ashford or anywhere in Kent, every street, every road and every copse and every field was full of military equipment everywhere.
Did you have any idea where you might go into
Europe? No. None at all.
Do you think security was good?
Excellent, yes. Yeah. So much so that when we moved out of Ashford and we went to the names keep slipping my memory now.
Where is it near?
Bury St Edmunds. And we went on the canvas. For some reason. We'd never been on the canvas before.
So
quite startling.
Did you think you were on your way then?
No. And we were coming back from breakfast, back to our tent. And one of the lads had a radio. And he said, "I've just heard on the radio, the second front's opened, they've invaded." And we're all going, "Hey, we've missed it, great." You know? So, big sigh of relief, you know, that we'd missed it on June the 6th.
So you thought it was a one-day operation?
Well, there'd been so much talk about the invasion, and we thought, well, they can't need us then, but, you know, they've done it. Of course, on the 7th of June, we were back at Ashford again. They'd just used it as a staging post for the first wave of invasion, really, which we didn't know, but I mean, that's what they'd done it for. And
so what was the mood in the regiment then?
Well, excitement and optimism and a feeling that, you know, at last we're going to do something now. Yeah. All the waiting's at an end. I think our intake of troops, we thought that North Africa and Italy and was just sort of skirmishes, really. That the real battle was going to be in France. Mm. There was just that feeling, I think, amongst all the soldiers there, that France was going to be the big test. You know.
So when did you hear what you might be doing?
Well, as I say, we moved back to Ashford the next day. So that was short-lived, the euphoria of the missing the 6th of June. And I think 2 days later, we moved further down south. I can't remember exactly where. But we were doing traffic control on crossroads, of getting all the traffic down to the docks and so on. And then we went down to London, to the docks in London.
For
embarkation. Oh, we took all our vehicles with us. We went in road convoy. And I didn't know at the time then, but there was just one squadron was going. And the anti-tank was attached to the squadrons that they were needed for.
And so what was the actual name of your precise unit?
C Squadron. C Squadron went as the advance party for the 53rd recce. And I think it was either three or four anti-tank guns went with them.
Right, with you.
Yeah.
And so what was it like arriving at the docks?
Well, we got down to London at night, and we were on the quayside, and the quaysides are just flat concrete areas. And we no sooner got there than there was an air raid. And we were in the middle of it, and they were targeting the docks. And there was nowhere to shelter at all. We felt extremely vulnerable, and anyway, this air raid went on virtually all night long, on and off. And the following day, we were loaded onto, I think they called them flat tops, which was like a floating platform with a little cabin at the very back of it, with a bloke and a steering wheel.
What date was this?
I think it was the 12th or 13th of June by then.
You were loaded on in the morning?
Yes, and they put all our vehicles onto this flat deck, packed in like sardines, and off we went, and we stayed on this thing overnight. So we were on virtually all one day and all night, and until the following morning. The following morning, we were off Normandy,
right.
And
so
we went to...
as dawn came, you could see France.
We could see the coast.
What could you see of France? I mean, what was the terrain like, and what could you hear?
Just smoke, noise, gunfire, because when we looked around, of course, I mean, there was hundreds of ships all the way around. You couldn't move for them.
What were your feelings then? What was the atmosphere like?
Again, I think it was just excitement, you know, that all this was going on. And